Alright, there's gotta be something on.
They say the word shit like 100 times.
Make the bully drink piss.
Whoa!
What is this exactly about?
Sean's parents are basically on the verge of a divorce.
We'll come back to bite them in the ass later.
I always wonder, like, why was it always that kid's problem?
Did you see that?
But I'm sure if I'm quite drunk enough to see Meet the Feebles.
Of course you didn't. Nobody saw it. You know why? Because no one saw this movie.
It's like Avenue Q, only worse.
Yeah, it was definitely a rental for me.
On 3D, plus the IMAX 3D, plus the other theater had it.
Which was not really that hard.
Wait, where did he come from?
Internet. One of those covers of the video store, you remember?
Oh, this is that movie? Yep, of course. Yep. What in the hell is this and why is it on my TV? Yeah, I'm gonna have to catch this from the beginning.
What am I watching? Dad, push the info button. What am I watching right now?
You're watching the audio version of a podcast is what you're doing. You're listening with your ears and not watching anything.
And you have no idea what you're watching.
We're the ones watching for you so you don't have to, or to tell you you better grow off your ass and go do watch. And I think for this movie, this is definitely a go fucking watch this if you haven't. You're crazy. Welcome to our run on Sunday, the Battle of the Monster Trucks. In this corner, everyone on the Fury Road. And on this corner, Hollow Nine. So, yes, we're talking about Mad Max Fury Road of 2015, the movie that took the world by storm and revitalized a franchise we all thought was long gone. I am your very energetic for a Sunday night host, Dave the Clone. And joining me on the panel of experts, starting from on mine, Matt is on the left. So let's go with Matt first.
Hey, everybody. I'm Matt Ratcliffe from Blurred Zone Nerds podcast and Twitterverse. Thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed this movie in a number of ways, so
excellent.
I can't wait to shoot the shit about it.
We're going to enjoy it in a whole new way tonight, so thank you for being with us. Up next is another Matt. Matt, go ahead. Who are you?
I am Gomez, not Adams. This is my I'm a recurring commentator. Hollow Nine.
I think regular host, I think, is probably an appropriate title there.
There you go. And I love this movie. The fact that it took 30 years to come out, I think, is okay. I give him a pass on this. Just how much I loved it.
Awesome. I think you and I are going to get along really well on tonight's show. And rounding out the cast, we need some female perspective. So all the way from the Fangirl Zone, say hi, Sean.
Hello. Sean Fangirl-S from the Fangirl Zone. How are you guys doing tonight?
Meh.
Well, I got my muzzle off just a second ago, so I'm like really, really good all of a sudden.
What a lovely day!
All of a sudden you can see my face and hear what I'm saying, and it's not like a repeat of Dark Knight Rises.
And his teeth aren't silver or anything. And thus far, he hasn't done the hand signals like from last episode, which...
Oh, me.
Yeah, you.
Our stealth haze. Well, Max...
our stealth haze.
Max has more of the, like, water, you, come here. Like, he has very guttural single-syllable lines. I think Tom Hardy had, like, 2 pages of dialogue in this whole movie.
And I think that's being generous.
But I loved it still, like, because the dialogue he had was fucking amazing. Like, that whole opening, soliloquy, I guess, is really what it was, to get Shakespearean on us here, is freaking epic. That, you know, I'm the one who runs from the living and the dead. Hunted by scavengers, haunted by those I could not save. You know, it's like, dude! Oh, fuck, man. It's like, you see that guy then step on a lizard and throw it right in his mouth raw, and you're like, this shit's gonna be nuts. This is gonna be crazy.
And then 3 seconds later, he's captured.
Yeah.
Right.
And the last of the VA interceptors has been destroyed, or at least, you know, stolen right away from the hero character. Very iconic thing to lose so early in the film.
And I love the fact that they actually had to build a new effect just to get it to flip.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this during the opening sequence?
In the opening sequence.
When they throw the spear or whatever to blow it up or whatever from behind?
They put a a nitrogen-powered blade underneath the one side of the car. So okay. that when it hit it, so it would really just flip up in the air all mm-hmm. the way. Fantastic.
There was a lot of treating the sand like water in this. You know what I mean? Like, it was very water world on the desert.
Water know? World done right.
Yeah, there you go. Water world without, like, the real mutant shit. I mean, you had mutant lizards, but then, well, there were mutant people,
well,
too, I
then
guess.
Then we get to the swamp. Yeah. No cop.
Good Lord. Oh, my God. This, ugh, the swamp. It's, I guess let's start with, like, what did you guys expect when you first heard that there was going to be a new Mad Max movie? Because for as much as I loved this, I gotta say, I really only remember Mad Max because it was a staple of the 80s. Because it was, like, something I grew up around. I mean, Road Warrior is fucking awesome. How is anybody going to forget Road Warrior? And Thunderdome, actually, when I think about it. But I definitely will cop to the fact that when I first saw a trailer for this movie, I was like, who the fuck is asking for this? Why? There's a new Mad Max movie coming out? What the hell's going on here?
And then he became super excited.
Then I lost
him. It's like Christmas for him.
Yeah, well, now it's just like, holy shit, I will never question again.
I did not know what it was supposed to be. I mean, obviously, I know Mad Max, but if it was supposed to be like a prequel, if it's supposed mm-hmm. to be...
Reboot.
You know... Yeah,
or a sequel. Because
everything's freaking retconned at this point. Who knows?
Right.
So I didn't know where this was supposed to land in the timeline. So
and
I was.
I think that a little bit of that is open to question as far as where, because I've heard a couple of different theories about where it's supposed to fall. Is this supposed to be like a different sequel to Road Warrior, and so Thunderdome never actually really happened,
or is it before Thunderdome?
Or is it before? And actually, I think my favorite theory is that it's really about it's the legend of the one they call Max.
Max Retzkowski. Okay.
So who knows what really happened and what didn't, but this is kind of like what everybody's talking about happened. Mm.
Oh, so we're hearing this story from a perspective, like even maybe Max's perspective, like remembering...
Or from the historian.
Because it was the first history man had that quote at the very end right after the film... Right after the same rising action from Dark Knight Rises.
Exactly. So it could be a little bit like, okay, so there might be some conflicting accounts of what really happened, and nobody really knows, but it makes for a good story.
Oh,
so.
I like that. I like that. Was it the who is the narrator at the end of Road Warrior? It's not the Gyro Captain, but it's the feral kid grown up. And is no longer
yeah.
feral, right? Okay.
Correct.
So he says, I think, in that closing that it's like we never saw him again. So it's like the idea that Max runs into all these groups that he only is with for the time of whatever particular adventure is in that film, and then he goes off and wanders again. He's like the Halley's Comet of the post-apocalypse. He just like runs into groups and then keeps going, and they're either changed or destroyed as a result.
Yep, pretty much.
Well, are we supposed to assume too then that story is the same Max over and over?
It might not be. I mean, the assumption is that, yes, it is, but it could just be, you know, this guy came along. He never really gave us a name, but hey, he kind of sounds like this other guy that we've heard about. Maybe they're the same guy.
Wait, multiple Maxes who were road warriors before the fall? That's the whole thing.
Or it's kind of like the different legends and different stories kind of get conflated together. Mm.
But, I mean, also, you know, the original being Mel Gibson, this movie's been in production for 17 years.
30. Yeah.
Well, the release date, the original release date was 2001.
Wow. Holy
and
shit.
Then 9/11, per George Miller, 9/11 happened. They lost a ton of their budget and things kind of got put on the shelf. And then a few years later, and Mel Gibson had signed on to do the film. And then a few years later, they, you know, revisited the movie and they were a go. And then Mel Gibson had his meltdown. And then they were like, no one wanted to work with him. It was like, you do not work with this man in Hollywood. So they had to revisit the film with a different actor. So, I mean, technically it could be the same Max. It's just a different actor.
Well, I think it's rumored, and I'm Google machining it as we're speaking here, that Tom Hardy actually wound up having to meet with Mel Gibson as sort of the final test. It was his go into the forest cave and fight your Vader version of yourself for Tom Hardy to actually get the part. And it was that Mel Gibson had to sort of approve that he would be able to maintain the same... portrayal in a way, because Max is a very complex character. I think even in the early movies, he doesn't have a lot of dialogue, and he barely... He's really the guy who's just willing to get the shit kicked out of him on the way to killing the bad guys so that some of the good guys could live. You know, it's like no group ever makes it completely unscathed. So it's not like he's a superhero, but he's just like this guy who he is completely an isolationist. He, you know, and I think the conclusion of his opening monologue was like, you know, pushed down into a single instinct to survive, you know, so it's...
Right. I mean,
going back to the original Mad Max, that was kind of his abandoning civilization to get his revenge.
Mm.
Oh, after his family is killed?
Yeah. So, I mean, he was the cop. He was sort of that dividing line between barbarism and civilization. And once his family gets killed, that's kind of the end of that dividing line for him. And he just goes on to the other side.
And even for, like, this film, I mean, for Mad Max 4, or Fury Road, I'm sorry.
No, I kind of like calling it Mad Max 4 to remember that there were three other movies before this
very
one.
Very true. I mean, you know, usually when you have these superhero films, I know we keep referencing Dark Knight, but it's a good parallel in the fact that there's this rise and fall. And for this particular Max, there is no rise. Like, it's only a fall. He's very atypical. So, I mean, through the whole film, it's like he's never really winning, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's kind of just... surviving.
Yeah.
He's just there.
But you do see him becoming more towards not just for himself during the course of the film as well.
Right. But I mean,
he has that opportunity to be just on his own.
Right. But usually when you have a hero or a hero in a film, they do great things. They're superior in some form or fashion, whether they're by themselves or with someone else. And to me, this film was very, at least that stuck out to me, was like, he's never really like badass. Like, just taking names.
He had moments, though. He did have moments where he's I got this. And you're just like, whoa, shit. All right, dude. Max is taking care of it.
But that goes to a different theory where this film really isn't Max's story. It's Furiosa's story.
Mm-hmm.
Max just happened to be there.
So, she became Imperator Furiosa in a misogynistic society that's very patriarchal.
Yeah.
She rises to this level of power.
So even losing an arm in the process, too.
But you know she's done some bad shit to get there, given everything else we see about this society.
Mm.
And so this is her trying to save the wives. That's her redemption quest.
Wow. And I do like that they come out of nowhere. You know, like for a movie where we're talking about movies that have rising action and falling action, those movies I would equate to like video games that have levels and you go up a level and new things happen. This is a 1980s Nintendo side-scrolling 8-bit done with fucking like Xbox One, PS4 graphics that just never stops. So it's like the map just keeps going and you have to like jump over all the shit or fight people and not get knocked off. And I heard that going into it thinking, is that a reason to think a movie is awesome? And then you see this and you go, yes, it is. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. You know, when I first saw the trailer, it was at Comic-Con, and I have to admit this, that I know all the references to Mad Max, but I've never seen a Mad Max movie.
Really? Ever. Wow.
But I know all of them. Like, I know
two men enter, one man leaves,
right.
Man. Ho.
Like, I've always known those references. So when I saw the trailer, I was like, this movie looks fucking awesome. And then that was the first time they debuted the trailer. And then when it said Mad Max, I'm like, oh, this movie looks dope. So then when I saw it, I was like, I'm all about the conversation or the meta of the, like, for a movie or a TV show, I'm always about, well, what's the conversation, right? Like, what's happening? What's the thread that continues throughout the entire film? And I'm sure we'll probably talk about this leading down, but just like the whole Oscar conversation about why this film is nominated, why it's getting such praise. And I really love that the conversation is literally a chase. It's just a chase. And that's, and I feel bad for people that can't see that, because it's like, it doesn't have to have this depth and this complex backstory and flashbacks and all these different things. It's an instant of a story that's isolated, and then they move on.
Sean is like trying to contain herself, like listening, going, no, none of that's right. None of that's right. We need backstory.
No,
I need shit to make this make sense. Fuck you.
Sorry, Sean. I love you, Sean.
And to be fair, I'm saying that for her. She could totally have something else. I'm just like trying to create controversy in the middle of our show.
I understand.
I apologize, Matt.
I understand Matt's point of view. But yeah, I was kind of like, everybody's talking about how this was a big kind of rah-rah feminism movie, which I personally didn't see it passing the Bechdel test, but everything I've read about it, it did pass the Bechdel test, that it didn't have to have the backstory. It didn't have to explain everything, but I felt like I was missing
I think a large part of it, this was like show, don't tell the movie.
Yeah, yeah, for real. Okay. A skill that a lot of filmmakers today, I think, don't actually possess so much, or at least
we see the milking mothers, but nobody ever comments on it.
Oh, the milking. Is that what they're called, too? Like, is that...
Yep.
See,
yep.
That's
pretty
one,
much.
One
yeah,
thing
it's
we,
mother's milk.
Yeah, but we should point later. Out about this movie. This is also a movie where no one's fucking names are really said. There are three names we learn, and, like, that's pretty much it. You have to learn the names of some of these other characters by going to IMDb and looking at the cast list, and you're like, right. Her name was Capable? Are you fucking serious? No one said that once in the whole movie. Go ahead, Gomez.
That's part. Well, that's part of my argument too, because the best.
Splendid Engerod.
Yeah.
Well, the best is supposed to say, you know, like you have female characters, you know their names. They're talking to each other about something other than a male character in the movie, which is why I felt like it didn't happen as much as it should have. And so everybody's saying, you know, rah rah feminism, which that's a whole different podcast that we'll be on later.
No, you should go with that. Go with that. If you've got thoughts on that, go with that. There's no reason to limit the discussion here.
I'm just saying, like, half the time they were talking about, I'm forgetting all the names. Crap.
Morton Joe.
Yeah. Him, like, controlling the water and being basically such a prick.
Do not become addicted to water. You will resent it.
Don't become addicted to the thing you're fucking 70% made of. Don't become addicted.
I mean, I know you need to live it all, but don't become addicted.
Don't become addicted to whatever's coming out of the tubes in my mask that I wear all the fucking time.
So, Sean, I mean, I've read about the test. I've read the test. I can hardly ever pronounce it, but I've read
the
test.
Bechdel test, I think, right?
I might be saying it wrong. Yeah.
No, I don't know if you're saying it right or wrong, but I know it is something like that.
I've heard it pronounced Bechdel test before, but it could that could be wrong as well. So we all know the test we're talking
right.
about.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not EPT.
But the thing that made it so interesting for Furiosa's character, from my point of view, as a female, I it took a while, but after I reflected on the film, I did see her as the lead character. Mm-hmm. And I do see Max or Tom Hardy as the co-lead, only because of it did seem like it was her story. He just happened to be guest starring in it for that instance. And also, I liked it because usually traditional films, the way they handle women is shitty. Yes. But in a more detailed answer, the way they handle women is usually women have to be broken down to be powerful or be strong. They can't just be in the moment and be a badass in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for Mad Max, she came in as a badass, like and stayed that way. And she was complex and she had attributes that were valuable and equal to a man, quote unquote. And she didn't have to be this damsel in distress. And it's missing a backstory, but I just didn't care. Hmm. I cared about the moment. And I mean, it's fine if you do or people do, but I was so enthralled by the moment.
I think that's really funny because Jason was actually saying the same thing. We were talking about it. And he's like, but you know, she had that whole section when they go on and she finds the woman that she grew up with. And there was that whole moment with all of them.
That's what I'm saying. There, it's not that there's no backstory. Like to
right,
me,
it's just like, I don't know.
I think it's because I've watched it so many times that I see it all every time I watch it now. But after even the first time, I thought, holy shit, there was so much that like you picked up on in the quick little dialogue that there was, or like nods to things in the frame. Like, I mean, there's a lot when he goes to first check on the breeding wives when they realize that the convoy has gone off the road. And there's all these like things written on the wall, like who killed the world and our babies will not be warlords. Like this was,
we are not things.
Yeah. Like this was like, they had planned this whole thing. And it's like this guy who is being shown to us in the beginning, like in elevated shots, being illuminated by light, lots of pageantry, clearly sort of the dictator character. But yet he in this, I mean, like, what the fuck is occupying your time in this world other than just watching dust blow around? Yet he didn't see this happen. He didn't see this being hatched right, like, in front of him. And the fact that, like, the war boys on the war rig, when she just goes off, they're like, hey, so what's going on here? What's up? You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of this, like, what the hell are you guys doing? There's nothing to really keep you from noticing shit being planned, yet shit's being planned, and it's kind of like they showed that the women were more attuned to, like, I guess the natural order of things, of, like, right and wrong, and how, like, the world they're in now is so far fallen that clearly what's going on with Emote and Joe can't be the right way of doing it.
But so what you're saying is completely right, and I completely agree with you, but the fact is that the majority, and it's the majority of people are conditioned to be spoon-fed every detail. They don't look for things like the conversation or the meta or the back or the writing that's on the wall 10 feet behind the character that you can kind of screenshot and zoom in on, and it gives you more detail about the story. They want, not, and I don't want to say people want, but films want to pack a 4-hour movie, you know, and which should be a 6-hour movie into in a 2-hour film, and then they want to give you all this detail, and it becomes so overwhelming instead of just condensing it to the moments that matter. And I feel like for Mad Max, George Miller did a really great job giving you the moments that matter. And if there were things like the extra detail, the writing on the wall, that depiction, some of the conversations, how they kind of led to the past and gave you some backstory, for instance, for Furiosa and her past, people really didn't pay attention to that. They looked at the action and the explosions and the quick scenes. Or maybe they need to go back and watch it again, too. But I just think that Hollywood has conditioned people to, not everyone, but has conditioned a lot of people, viewers, to be spoon-fed every single detail. And if they don't, they don't approve. They don't like the film. It's not traditional. It's not normal, quote-unquote.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that's why I kind of hate myself for not liking this more.
Oh, don't do that just because we're all loving the shit out of it. You know,
because because so many times if something happens off screen, I'm like, okay, I'm glad they didn't have to hold our hand and walk us through it.
Right.
Well, I mean, I got it.
But it's just like, I don't know. I even if there was like one conversation more to give me about Furiosa, that I would have been a little happier with it.
I want to say that I thought it was a really brave choice, and I thought a brilliant choice to not fucking tell us how she lost her arm. Like, not even draw attention to the fact that there's this, like, ghetto, futuristic, retroistic, robotic, prosthetic arm that she is using, and it's the only time she has two hands. Is it's like, it's the shit that fucking Bruce Campbell makes in Army of Darkness, you know what I mean? It's like, how the fuck is that working? Who cares, dude? She's the best sniper they've got, you know, like...
How about we just go with the fact that our two main leads are somebody who's handicapped, i.e. missing the arm, and is suffering from severe PTSD.
Oh my god, yeah, like a real, like a commentary on mental illness and how it saved his life, actually. The hallucination with the hand on the forehead. There's your hand movement. I'll be doing this for the rest of the
and of course, I'm watching the film as we're talking, and I'm noticing again just all the shout-outs to the previous three films.
Like
the fact that on Nux's car, right above where Max is, they've got the helmet and goggles from the gyrocopter pilot.
On what turns out to be an explosive device. But that was also in the shape of like that beaked skull. So Nux had like a theme of bird skulls throughout his car as well, like the one that was on the spring and like kind of like mimicking his erratic behavior. Like the War Boys to me are the grown-up version of the Waiting Ones from Thunderdome, right? Like a lot of the even look,
okay,
there were a couple of them that have that same white and black paint scheme going on. But again, it's interesting that they have this universe to play with where each movie has just like flavors of the other movies in it, but it literally could be, you know, this could be like the Joker had four different reasons for how he got the scars or whatever. You know, he tells the story five different times. It could be like five different tales of Max that are like, not any one single one of them is true, but little pieces of all of them happened, and so we make it into this great saga of the final road warrior.
You know, I think really one more thing about Furiosa, too, is that going back to what you said about, you know, how they never told us about how she lost her arm. I think it goes back to the damsel in distress. If you went back and gave a flashback about how she lost her arm, all of a sudden she's this weak person, and she loses the title of badass, complex, incredible heroine. She's just this broken woman, and we don't care about, we meaning George Miller, when they're writing this film, they did not care about that, and they did not want to address that. And I really praise them for just establishing her today. I just really love the movie for the now, how it does now. I don't care about, and it really helped me appreciate not giving a fuck about the past or the side story.
It's interesting that we mentioned that Miller sort of self-imposedly decided to postpone the film as a result of 9/11. When you think about, and this just struck me, and it could be because, again, it's like the billionth time I've watched it, or maybe I always find that having conversations on this level where it's like, hey, this is like kind of like we're walking from the cafeteria to philosophy class, and it's getting deeper and deeper as we get there. Mr. Anderson, Professor Anderson would be proud of all of us, I think, Gomez. But it's like it really captures the significance of how much one day can change everything about like an entire society. Like, I probably would have never picked up on this if we hadn't brought up 9/11, but think about the beginning of the movie, the way things are going, the war boys are all doing their chant. They're like, we are war boys. Today we're bringing Aqua Cola, and we're going to Gas Town. You know, it's like everybody's fucking psyched. They're all doing their war boy shit. And then, before the end of the day, like, literally everything goes to fucking hell. The boss gets in his car and has to drive out with the entire army, including the rolling badass "We're fucking coming to get you" band with the blind guitar player.
The Dufoil!
Just to fucking let people know this shit's going down, guys. You hear this song? Go running. This is Cowboys from Hell future version. And
was I the only one who wanted that to be Flea?
It would have been badass if it was somebody super famous.
It was pretty badass being Iota.
What? Who?
Iota.
Who is that?
The artist.
Is he actually a blind guitar player who plays a double neck?
He's not
guitar?
Blind, but he's very much like an avant-garde out there, little bit crazy musician.
Did he write all the music? Did he write the music?
He did not.
Oh, okay.
Did not write the music.
I'm so sorry for setting up expectations to be immediately knocked down out there, audience. By the way, we know there's an audience out there listening, and if you'd love to join into conversations like this, you can always email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. That's the word hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, podcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us at hollow9cast on Twitter. Same deal with the hollow and the 9. Everyone's going to get this. Believe me, it's going to sink in. Shit's nice. It's very smooth. If I don't say so myself.
talk about other parallels, looking at the war boys and how they kind of parallel with ISIS or Boko Haram.
Oh my god, wow, we're going there.
Okay. Yeah, might as well. I mean, you've got these people who are religious fanatics because they believe that they're going to die. I live, I die, I live again.
So yeah.
They're going on to paradise when they die. They're being controlled by this dictator who is very consciously controlling their expectations.
Yeah.
He's got them hopped up on drugs.
Like, they're literally, are they spraying chrome? Like, is that, they're
spray paint.
It's
they're
like,
huffy.
Yeah, but like right on their fucking teeth and everything. Like, holy shit, dudes, really?
I thought it was supposed to be some kind of futuristic drug.
No, I thought so too.
Okay. It's spray paint.
But it doesn't do anything to them.
It makes them crazy.
They're huffing paint.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I mean, other than that?
I mean, I was like, I thought we were saying that it didn't do anything. It was just like an aesthetic thing. Okay. Because I was like, I know it does something to them.
It's definitely kicking things up a notch.
Definitely.
I'm ready to go the fuck out on this. Yeah! Give me another speed! Jumping off the jet! It gets bad.
It's That's all I'm saying.
Like, I'm surprised that, you know, maybe there may have even been an idea where they were going to inject it, like, or jack it right in the way the blood bags. I mean, there's a lot to talk about with some of this, like, future, like, Walking Dead level survival going on here, you know?
Going up back to the Dufour, though, even that makes sense because armies for centuries
the
have been going
coats, dude.
With music. I mean, be it bagpipes, be it minstrels, be it drums, be it whatever. So having heavy metal music blasting while you're rocketing across the wasteland makes perfect sense to me.
Shit, man. I wanted to put that in my car and just drive on the fucking highway like...
So Kiko drums on back with the guy on the roof.
Motherfuckers better move. It's almost Rob Zombie level. It's like Dracula. Oh, shit.
But again, it makes... I mean, I think Immortan Joe is he's not stupid. I mean, he's a dictator. He's an evil bastard, but he's not an idiot.
I mean, he looks like a fucking monster with that mask he wears that opens when he feels like opening the mouth. Like, it's like, dude, what the fuck is going on with this? What? All right, man.
And he's wearing the kind of the plastic protector chest piece that hides just how sick he is.
Yeah, so he's got the radiation sickness, right? It's like he's got the cancer. He's got the radiation sickness.
He's having tumors scraped off of him.
I just say I hope the women are facing the other way, that they're going doggy style.
Oh, God, I didn't even want to talk about that. It was such a...
Hi, folks. Welcome to the Fangirl Zone.
Oh, shit. I hope it's doggy, or at least blindfold.
One of the comments was that the one woman who's like ready to go back, I think her Cheeto or something like that.
She's
like the one that's willing to go back because I should have had the IMDb. How bad he is yet.
Oh, is that what it is? Did they say that? I've seen this movie how many fucking times and I've missed that? Wow. All right. So when did they? Was that when she was running back? She said like.
Yeah.
They were like, you don't know because you haven't tried, you haven't been through this yet? Is that what
it is? Pretty much.
Wow. Fuck, man.
So she's like the innocent one.
We were his treasured ones. I know he'll take us back.
But Splendid was the favorite.
And Splendid was
the
pregnant
one. Pixie from X-Men. All right, I'll look it up. Fire up the Google machine. Sorry, guys.
Is anyone else hearing that like crazy?
Because, I mean, you have Splendid who's pregnant, and then you have, I think it's the Dag, who's also pregnant. But that doesn't get, you don't find that out until much later.
Which one is, the blonde one.
Right.
What was her name? What were they called?
Dag?
They run over her head.
No, Splendid gets run over.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And that's a direct result of what Max does when he's trying to stop them, and he shoots, and he grazes her leg. And then,
so wait, she slips because the blood when she steps on the fender, that's what she slips in. Jeez, I mean, I guess I kind of see it happening like that, but I always just felt like it's like, well, also, they're driving in the fucking desert, she's not wearing a harness, they're driving over rocks, it's bound to happen. If she just, what pisses you off is that she just survives barely missing that jutting out fucking piece of rock when he's like, Splendid! Splendid! Get inside! Like, oh.
But then you also wonder, like, okay, who else is going to die at this point?
Well, they had to, you know, if all of them lived, that would be pretty unreal. I mean, think about Road Warrior. Everybody fucking dies in that. You know, like, almost all the good guys die. Like, a handful, two or three live. And even as a little kid, you're like, they're not supposed to make movies like this. Like, I liked that chick with the headband. What the hell just happened here?
The chick with the headband.
She's supposed to fucking live. Like, why? She was the hot chick from other 80s movies. What? Like familiar people are dying.
What? Why is the bad guy using them as a hood ornament?
Oh.
That was Road Warrior. I mean, we first saw that concept come out in Road Warrior.
And then they set that guy on fire later. Oh, shit. And so to have in the trailers Max starting out his journey as a hood ornament, you know what I mean? You're like, how the fuck is this going to happen? Right. What? Like,
I mean, I spent the longest time trying to figure out, watching the trailers, why are they riding around with Max strapped to the front of a car?
Yep.
How does that make sense? Oh, and then I find out he's being used as an involuntary blood donor.
That whole thing with the blood bag and the tattooing, and I mean, the idea of the level that, like, if you come across this group, it's not like they just let you in and live there. You are actually going to be hunted like wildlife, and they're going to test your blood and say, universal donor, circle that shit, write it on it. We have a, first of all, he goes to the template section where they put all the possible things it could be. It's like, you know, like, then it goes to the person who circles all this thing. Okay, he's O negative, wild, feral, you know, high octane, feral blood. Popping me up. You know, it's just like, holy shit, you guys are fucking nuts.
It's like, careful, he's a biter, get the muzzle.
You know, the thing that's funny about that is, even when I saw the trailer too, I was like, why is he, like, hung up like this?
Isn't he the hero?
Like, he's the hero, and I was, and then so I had the question of, when does this happen? So it was not about why, it was about when. Yeah. And for it to happen so quickly, again, another reason why I was just really surprised in a good way by this film, because it was like, damn, like,
and we get it over with quickly too, though.
Really quickly, like.
But you know,
I hate when they show stuff in the previews and you never get it in the film.
Yeah, that happens all the time. Yes. So, unfortunately,
usually that'll be thrown on the Blu-ray as a deleted scene. Or they'll put it out and then a year later they'll put it out. And you're just like, fuck me. All right, yes, of course, I need to see it the way the director wanted me to see it. why the fuck I didn't see that the first time around, I still don't get, but okay, thank you.
Speaking of, as the director wanted to see, I heard a rumor that there's supposed to be just a black and white version of this being released.
Really? I would be interested in seeing that.
And that was George Miller's original vision, was it being a black and white film.
But I really like what they did with the color textures in this. Like, the way it was so vivid, like the stark contrast between, like, the skies and the desert, and then having them look so, like just dirty and not, like, remarkable, except for the five crazy hot wives dressed in white. Like, out of nowhere, in the middle of this movie, there's all of a sudden hot chicks in underwear. You're like, oh, shit. Nice.
Yeah, getting the chastity belt cut off.
The chastity belt with teeth, like a dentata myth fucking coming to life. Like, oh, they really want to make sure nobody who's not supposed to be in there gets in there. That's insane. Only the fucking Immortan can go. Maybe that's why his mask opens. It, like, you know.
Oh,
that's gross.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Were we not talking about a fucking movie that takes place in a mutated future where, like, the guys have, like, tumors growing out of their necks that they name and all kinds of craziness?
This is Bob.
And his son's Corpus Colossus in Rictus Erectus?
Oh, God.
Dad, she thinks you can lose us in there, Dad!
Like, okay. Thanks, Rictus. Thank you.
Which, by the way, the two sons beat a shout-out to Master Blaster.
I thought
both
so.
Of them?
What? Yeah. But okay, so you have Rictus Erectus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the little guy on the top.
Really smart, but he's obviously not. He's not going to win any fights anytime soon.
Go see what's agitating Dad. Probably the fact that they're going off course, I think, is what we probably agitating him. You just told him the shit's not going where it's supposed to go, right? Okay.
Dad, why the fuck is he upset?
Notice Immortan immediately goes to his vault. He knows what's going on.
Those bitches have been planning to leave. Those bitches have been planning to leave.
Yeah. Is it just me, or did it feel like he didn't want to educate any of his sons at all? If they're supposed to be what takes over when he does eventually die, they were going to be in big trouble because they were, like, serious dumbasses.
Well, that's why I'm pretty sure.
Originally was, like, I don't think Rick has had the brain power. No matter how much education you threw at him, just wasn't going to stick to the law.
I mean, he literally just pulled that engine apart at the end, and you're like, yep, that's a good move. I'm on a thing that's moving. Pull the engine apart. Yep, I'm Rictus! Yes, Rictus Rectus. Congratulations.
You're obviously the thinker in the group.
You are our magical plot device. You're making our plan come true. How does it feel?
they could lose us in there, Dad.
Yes, they're gonna lose you under the truck in a minute. Rip that engine apart, boy. You do it.
And Colossus actually probably was pretty smart, but again, no. In a war society, warrior society, who's gonna respect him?
Right.
Yeah, he's in the floating chair. He's in the future Wally floaty chair, which is just held up by bungee cords.
According to the comics, at least, there was a third son who Max ends up killing.
Oh wow. But instead, they just had it be the unborn child that didn't survive.
Yeah, but from what I understand, he was he made Caligula look good.
Wow.
Yeah.
This will never make it into the movie. Let's just fucking forget that.
It's like, hey, you know what? Comic book it.
Yeah, everybody loves a good comic book. Oh, man, then there's the whole Vivalani thing, the whole many mothers that we find eventually who, like, none of them get names either, except for, like, the Keeper of the Seeds. And I don't know, there's one thing, I guess, if we're going to talk about some of the specifics of some of these action scenes, because I think in addition to some of the depth we are finding to the way the story is being told here, like, I think we've uncovered that it's a little bit more than some people thought already. There is plenty of room to talk about the technical aspect of how just fucking awesome it was to be a nonstop, like, chase scene action movie that barely took a breath. And I think the one time it does stop, it becomes a fist fight movie. You know what I mean? So you're just like, holy shit, like, telling a story like this and having it move at that pace, pretty impressive. And all of it being practical, very little CG.
There's videos. I think there's a video, there's a video out there with showing the when Max is like the flagship of that car. And it's minus the CGI, and it looks almost exactly the same.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, well, the practical effects are just gorgeous.
I think what really cracks me up about this as well is that they couldn't actually film this where they wanted to in Australia.
Mm. Really?
Because it was too green.
Oh, there you go.
So they ended up having to take it to Africa.
Really?
To do the filming there. Because, again, the boy, they were like, oh, yeah, we'll do it this place in Australia. They went there like, shit, there's trees and grass.
Yeah, not really the post-apocalypse we were trying to portray. And then what did you guys feel? How do you feel about the sequences that are clearly shot during the day but using that good old-fashioned day-for-night filter and making it all look blue so that it's like the brightest moon you've ever seen in your life?
It's not just blue. It's electric blue.
Yeah, like right. And the moon is throwing shadows where you're like, whoa, seriously, it's crashing into Earth right now. Like, what the hell's happening?
It's like, that's not just a super moon,
it's a space station. It's a star killer base. I liked it. I thought it stylistically it matched all the other stuff they were doing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Especially given how super saturated the daylight scenes were.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it worked well.
Yeah, I liked it. It's a nice to see a return to a lot of practical stuff. I think a lot of the CG stuff that was also obvious was stuff that they added for when it was shown in 3D in theaters,
right?
Which, you know, when you ever see that in the 2D version, you're just like, oh, what bullshit. What fucking lame asses.
I don't even remember doing this in 3D.
Are you talking about the steering wheel flying at you?
Yeah, the guitar. The guitar first.
No, that was a practical effect.
Really?
Yeah, it was stop motion.
Really? Really? Because
yes.
It looked very CG-ish. I mean, it was clearly gimmicky, though. It was definitely done for the 3D, only for the 3D. But, that makes me feel a little bit better about it.
That was a practical stop-motion effect. I mean, I love the fact that the flipping of the war rig at the very end was a practical effect.
Wow, yeah. And that it really looks like Rick just gets smashed by that truck standing on the hood of it as it flips over. You're like, wow. Everyone, at least all the bad guys get their just desserts.
Or the story I heard also was at one point, Tom Hardy obviously has his head like inches from the ground as the car is speeding along.
Oh, is that when they were hanging off the poles? The pole cat had him? Was it, or is this like not when it was supposed to be? And like, we're talking about a different scene?
No. I don't think it was a pole cat. I think it was one of the other times. And Tom Hardy's son was watching what was going on. And then he's like, he went to the director, like, what happens if they let him go? And he goes, Twitch was like, well, he'll probably end up going under the wheels.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, that must
have
been
comforting.
That must have been when she was holding on to him when he fell off the truck, and then like Nux comes along and kicks him over onto the other car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So much badass in this movie. So much badass, and I think, you know, Tom Hardy ever since Bane has just that aura about him for me. So I feel like that definitely carried over. It may have even painted my first viewing with a little bit of bias that I'm no problem copying to, because I think Tom Hardy kicks ass. I'm a big Tom Hardy fan.
Yeah, I think for me it was definitely, I knew of Tom Hardy before that, but Bane, I think a lot of people see him in a different light now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you go from Bane to this to The Revenant.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, like, the characters he's been portraying lately have just been great. It's almost like he's typecasted, but in a really good way.
Yeah.
Like, it really benefits him instead of negatively impacting him.
I mean, I really liked him in Inception. I liked his character in Inception.
By far. Absolutely. Amazing.
And
I also think it's really funny that they took a really pretty boy actor, Nicholas Holt, and made him really ugly.
I did not realize that was Nicholas Holt for the longest time, even though I saw his name in the credits. I was like,
either.
Wow.
I did IMDb a couple days ago, and I was like, that's Nicholas?
Young
I did not know
Beast.
That.
Young Beast. Wow, dude.
He did look a lot different, but that's just a credit, I think, to the makeup team.
Yeah, well, to him too, though. I mean,
an actor.
That was such for the promotional material, such like an iconic, the whole, like, what a lovely day! You're just like, wow, they made another crazy Future People movie. This is this is another fucking thing with the nuts in the desert all eating each other and raping people and stuff. Great. And then you're like, oh, that's fucking Young Beast. Badass. And the fact that he was so, I like that he was the sort of sounding board for how devout everybody was to that religion. You know, this religion that Emote and Joe sold them. This whole, like, no, I'm awaited on the road to Valhalla. I'm supposed to kill myself now. And you're like, mm-hmm. Oh, Jesus. But, like, the hero of the movie's on the back of your car. Like, you can't kill yourself.
It's not going to go well.
And it was just by sheer luck. Like, oh, the top of his car blows off right at the right time for Max to jump up and grab the flare and stop him. And you're like, you know, but again, I think there's a certain level to, like, a lot of stuff happening for a reason. Like, that's why the hallucinations made Max do that whole gesture to be able to stop the arrow from going all the way in his head at the end of the movie. I don't know. I love stuff like that. I love it when there's, like, a half-spiritual, half-practical thing going on.
I thought it was weird, though, how quickly Nicholas Holt's character, all of a sudden, he's like, oh, so he's been lying to us this whole time? You know, when he's in there with the wives and talking to him, like, all of a sudden, his whole attitude changes, and it's like, what, in the course of 20 minutes?
Capable is super hot, dude. She's so hot. She was my favorite one, the redhead with the pigtail. I was like, oh, my fucking God, wow.
Wow. Also, you could also argue that, you know, it's the first time in almost ever that anybody's shown him any kindness at all.
Yeah, even
that's
like,
true, because he's okay. Talking about the growth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the second thing is, you could also argue that maybe he's just sobering up.
Because they do keep shooting up, like, spray paint. and
on the regular.
It's yes. Like, and, you know, the other thing, too, is that he actually was genuinely heartbroken over failing. Like, he felt like it was such an insult to his beliefs of, like, this was my moment. Like, God gave me a chance right there, and within seconds I fucked up.
Cheated or died famously, and I'm mediocre.
Yeah. Mediocre! You're like, oh, thanks, video game announcer. Great. You go ahead and drive up there and run over your favorite wife, fuckface. Nice move. That's good. Mediocre. Oh, shit! Like, well, yeah, maybe you shouldn't be judging everybody all the time, dick. I don't know. Oh, man, such a great fucking movie. Such a great movie. What have we not... Okay, so what happens to the Keeper of the Seeds? You know, like, when they're at the in the final stretch in the trench run battle of the war rig...
Okay, so as they're driving back to... Let's just make sure that everybody knows... They've gotten away from Immortan Joe and his badass army.
Oh, and so and much. I mean, like the swamp we probably plan, could talk about too, I guess.
And the but their big plan is to drive back through the badass army.
Well, once they find out, they find out that the green place they were thinking was out there. This thing that Imperator Furiosa remembers from her childhood was going to be the safe haven. It's the place of the many mothers. It was a place where there was still water, where there was still vegetation. But little did they know in the 7,000 days that Furiosa was with the Imotan Joe clan, the green place kind of went out of business. It sort of dried up and became the swamp. And the swamp itself was a whole like mini section that almost felt a little bit like a return to Neverending Story in some ways for me, too.
See, I felt Dark Crystal.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Shit, nice.
Because of that walker thing.
Oh, yeah, that they never explained, just walking around by himself.
Right.
Well, you noticed that there were no boys with the mothers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Where do you think the boys ended up?
Yeah.
Those ended up being the stilt walkers.
So now, is this because you read the comic book?
No.
You just put that together.
Yes.
Fuck me, man. I give up. I lose this podcast. It's over. I've seen this movie so many times, and that never occurred to me. I just like, these bitches don't like dudes. They kill dudes. They straight up kill motherfucking dudes. Because as soon as like Max and Nux get out of the door, who the fuck are those men? Trust us, you need a dick or two around. It's going to help. It's going to help.
I think it's a little too patriotic to say they hate all men, because as soon as Furiosa says, no, it's cool, these guys are okay, they're like, okay, yeah, fine, whatever, they're with us now.
True, but they have a trap of a naked chick pretending to be in distress that is clearly, although, granted, 90% of the men floating around out there are people like, you know, the Humongous.
Like Rictus.
Yeah, Rictus Erectus. Yeah, it's kind of like... I guess why they would use that as their trap, but I just kind of felt like, yeah, Max, dude, no matter where you go, it sucks for you, bro. It just keep that low profile you're keeping. Be like, you've got more friends. So what makes you think there's green places out there? And you're just like, just keep talking like that. It's okay. Chicks are digging it. It's what won them over, actually, because you were just some guy who ate slinger until you started talking a little. And now they're all like, we listen to Max. The smooth sounds of Max.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, so the Keeper of the Seeds, like, this guy swoops in and does something to her. He hits her with a hedge trimmer or puts a drill through her head, all the way through her head, and she somehow survives it. But it's like, does he half chop her head off and leave it still connected? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Because she became nearly headless.
It's like, and she was still like kind of like semi-conscious for a while. Like she did some stuff still, but she eventually just dies. I never understood.
It does take a little while for it to bleed out.
Is that what was? Oh God, dude, it was crazy. And you know, as soon as they hatch a plan like this, they're like, okay, so you know the guys we've just spent the whole like movie running away from? Yeah, time to run right back through that shit. Like, let's just do it. We've been beaten down. We don't have much, although they wind up getting a bunch of weapons from when they killed the bullet farmer. That swamp sequence was nuts. That actually
sing, brother Heckler. Sing, brother Koch.
I am the conductor of the choir of death. Sing! And then she's like, do they realize they're shooting at us? It's just like, yeah, I don't think he cares. Hold up a flare. I am. Hold it closer. It's right in front of you. Ah! That's insane. Oh, man. That scene just makes me cringe. But,
And he actually was kind of like the reasonable, almost, bad guy before he got blinded.
A family squabble. Filthy babies. Yeah, they all were like so caricaturish. It was like nuts.
And then you've got the people eater.
There's the people eater himself coming to count the cost. Oh my God, yeah. I fucking love this movie.
I would have never guessed by how much you remember this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yet I didn't put any of these like background things together. I was just like, oh yeah, they wrote stuff on the walls before they ran away. He's like, yo, they're the stilt walkers. I'm like, I give up. Fucking domino, motherfucker, you win.
You thought you were paying attention to the film.
I just let it wash over like brain candy, man. It's so pretty to look at. And there's hot chicks that just come out of nowhere. It's just like, yeah, all this disgusting fucking dude action. And you're like, whoa, wait a minute. That hair you can see from space. The blonde and the red. You're like, what the fuck?
They were being kept as sex slaves, so they're kind of dressed that way, and they're kept clean-ish.
Well, yeah.
And then they come out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, once they show up, they never leave. But what's cool is that they do stuff during the battles. Like, when Max gets they shoot, like, a harpoon and pull the steering wheel off the truck, and, like, his hand is kind of, like, smashed between that and the roof. They, like, reach out and clip the chains with the fucking bolt cutters. Well,
they put themselves in the way between Max and Warden Joe to keep him from shooting them.
To keep him from shooting Furiosa. They jumped there. Yes. That was fucking awesome.
Kind of like leaned out.
And it was Splendid. Or no, is Ed Harrod and Splendid the same person?
Yes.
Okay.
Splendid and Harrod.
Gotcha. But Harrod! Harrod!
The run over.
That's my child! That's my property!
Because you had Toast the Knowing.
Yes, who is the one that ends up counting out all the ammunition.
That's Lenny Kravitz's
daughter. That was the one who was
I just say Lenny Kravitz's daughter.
Yeah, Zoe Kravitz. That was the one who was Pixie.
Yeah, exactly.
Splendid,
yeah.
Capable, the Dag, and Credo, the Fragile.
Capable is my favorite one. Oh,
I thought it was
God.
Cheeto.
Oh, what? Yeah, sorry.
She was like, Lord. Really, Cheeto?
Cheeto
the Fragile.
With a D. That's
yes.
Chi.
I know.
It's not easy being cheaty. It's not easy being cheaty.
And
Valkyrie survived too, right?
No, Valkyrie gets fucking run the fuck over. Also, there are dumb deaths. That's the other thing. It's like, yo, bitches, get out of the way. Do not think you can turn around and shoot at a fucking truck driving at you. Are you out of your fucking mind?
But people have to be dumb on both sides.
Sure. Yeah, I guess.
And really, where was she going to run to?
I don't know, but I would not have turned my back on the rest of the oncoming traffic. You could have kept trying to do that dive out of the way, dive onto into the truck stuff. It worked once. It's like better than just like, hey, I'm shooting at that one and it didn't work. So I'm still like, oh, wait, there's people above. Oh my God. I'm fucking bumper pizza for the people eater.
Bumper pizza.
Score one for the people eater. Holy shit. The other hot chick who came along out of nowhere to the end of the movie is now being killed. Back to you guys in the booth. And you're like, yeah, it's, I just don't even fucking know, man. She was literally kneeling on the ground in the middle of a drag race. Good luck. Back to you guys. She took it right in the beak, Cotton.
Oh.
Yeah. All the Vavilani, like two of them make it. And, I guess, what is it, 4 out of the 5 wives? And
four out of the 5 wives make it.
Furiosa barely makes it. Max makes it, but...
But leaves.
Like a douche. I'm like, dude, come on. Of all the times to leave, 5 chicks. 5 if you count Furiosa, all right? Come on. Could have any one of those chicks. I know I bring it to the most basic level all the time. But after, like, surviving that, you'd be like, all right, yeah, I need to remember why being alive is awesome.
But he was still haunted.
But that's not what, and that's not why he's doing it, though.
Right. I know, it's sad, isn't it? It's sad.
Not everybody has your base urges.
Again, it's sad. Why the fuck wouldn't you? You have to perpetuate the species. It's the end of the world. It's like, keep it hanging on.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, have like a freaking mutant, like the ones that are all cheering at the end. You're just like, oh my God, you're a monster. Like, why? Why is this happening? Well, at least we all have water now. At least we'll just let the water flow.
Does that mean they were going to disconnect all the mothers that they were milking?
It's so disgusting. It's so disgusting. And when I just keep thinking of when they had Erectus testing the bottle in the beginning. Oh, it's good. You're just like, oh, Jesus Christ. It's so gross. Oh, why? Although, I guess, why should we be disgusted by human milk? We drink cow milk.
I know, but we don't have women, like, hooked up. Well, okay, I guess if they're pregnant.
And yeah, I was going to say, there was a PETA video that's been hitting the news feeds lately on Facebook that basically makes you feel like the biggest asshole on earth if you drink milk or eat beef. But the fact that, like, to be able to keep lactating, they're basically keeping cows pregnant for, like, years and years straight. And the idea that I was like, oh, my God, that's what they're doing to these people. And it's a Moton Joe.
Well, that's also why they have them. If you notice at the beginning, they're holding dolls.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and that's actually been shown to help women keep lactating, is if they have that kind of maternal instinct. Oh. And the dolls standing in for the babies actually does help with that.
And then do the babies just become war boys? Is that what the deal is?
Assuming they're healthy.
Or they're just probably thrown like the old 300, right? Like, they just throw them off the cliff. Like, yep, defective. Like, throw that off the cliff. Like, Jesus, guys. Oh.
Wait, does that mean the girls just keep becoming the wives, like, back in Thrones?
Oh, yeah, like recycling.
Ugh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And that's why all the people are all mutated.
Okay, wait, maybe they trade them with the other towns, which
is why the movie was just a giant car chase, because thinking about this shit will make you fucking like, I don't want to live.
This is not a society you want to be a part of.
Put me on that goddamn war rig. I'm going out today. Witness!
Now the more I think of that, I'm more disturbed.
Well, the thing is, too, though, you know, now there's all this talk about sequels or additional movies being written in this universe. Like, I think George Miller recently confirmed that there will be more films. So there's places that we know of that we never saw, like Gastown and the Bullet Farm. And we can assume that there must be other sort of settlements, like the Citadel. Like, we don't even know where these Vavilani were hanging out once the Green Place was gone. But they were definitely had some kind of something set up before they decided to go take the Citadel. So I'm kind of anxious to see more stuff happening in this universe and have it be like the same as the other Mad Max movies used to be. Like, it's still Tom Hardy and he shows up and it's going to be a completely new cat. Like, we'll probably never see Furiosa again. Although, I don't know. Would we want to see Furiosa?
She kind of deserves her own movie, I think.
Would we actually see Mad Max again, though?
Probably not.
Yeah. Like, if you're trying to explore that section that's right there, you may never see him again, and it may.
Or you may not see Tom Hardy again.
Right, and it may just be more like Gomez is saying with Furiosa, or you know what happened.
See, I
after
could deal,
the uprising.
I could deal with like a spinoff, but I definitely need another Mad Max with this Max.
Yeah, and,
you know what
and,
I mean?
And I think Miller has confirmed that at least one sequel has been written already. I think it's called Wasteland.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So the whole world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, though, think about the idea that, like, clearly the Gastown boys and the Bullet Farmer, I mean, they were all Imotan Joe's brothers or sons.
More like lieutenants.
Well, like, doesn't he says, "Are you coming, brother?" And he goes, "Wait, wait." I thought it was, like, actually three brothers that had sort of taken over these three strategic.
I don't think they were related. Because I mean, Imotan Joe, if you go look at the backstory at all, Imotan Joe was a colonel in the Australian Army.
He was a what? A colonel?
A colonel in the Australian Army.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So maybe they were also brothers
well,
in arms, kind of
well,
thing?
Well, the people farmer wasn't. He was just like some sort of businessman that they kind of rescued along the way. And he ended up becoming the morbidly obese cannibal that he is now.
Wait, that's the Gastown guy, right?
Yeah, people eater.
People here.
I don't know where Bullet Farmer came from.
Yeah, the Bullet Farmer, man. What a fucking lunatic. But, you know, I don't know. I imagine that there could be sort of, they could do this, like, thing where they're, like, part of a crime syndicate that then once, like, after all this mm-hmm. happened, the other outreaches beyond those cities come back and look for him, and what if one of them captures Max? Because Max does have a tendency to get captured by groups. You know, fucks things up once he's captured, but he does get captured, you know, like, okay.
Okay, he also has a tendency to, you know, to lead things on merry chases across the wasteland.
True.
It's not like the first time, this is not the first chase Max has ever been in.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in fact, to me, like, the biggest comparison is this is an analog to Road Warrior. This is like a very modernized Road Warrior because of sort of the same circumstances, I guess. But
even at the end of Thunderdome, you had the train chase.
Oh, true. Shit, man. I keep forgetting. I always just, like, once they leave, once the two man enter, one man leave shit ends, it's sort of like that movie, like, just blurs out for me.
Your brain shuts off.
We get to the waiting ones, and I'm like, and I'm starting to not care. Like, there we go. I hate to admit it. This movie never has that moment for me. I never am like, and I am always caring. Like, oh, this is insane. I never feel comfortable. Never can relax.
Yeah, Thunderdome switches too many gears too many times, I think.
Yeah. So. I'll say that on first watching, I wasn't sure if I was liking this movie. When I like basically only heard all the hype, and there was a kid at work who was our admin who had seen it four times in the theater, and I'm going, whoa, this must be something really incredible. And it wasn't until they finally get to the first time they pull into the canyon, and they're trying to, like, maintain the deal that she had set up with the
Buzzards.
Rock Riders. Yeah, was that what they're called, the Rock Riders? And that, with that Junkie XL song, once that sequence starts, like, from that moment on, I was like, I am in for good now. Like, something about the whole, that sequence coalescing between the music, the bikes jumping over the truck, the shit catching on fire, her using the dirt as water to put the fire out in a way, and, like, just everything about that sequence really just sold the movie for me. And so from then on, no matter what happened, I was going to be like, this is awesome. And that made me like more the parts leading up to that the next time I watched it. Did you guys have any moments like that in this movie for you that, like, just totally sold it for you?
I think just that initial, like, not the very initial chase scene, but when he's trying to escape from being tattooed, and he sees them coming to brand him, and that's the moment that he's going to escape. He's like, okay, this is definitely going to be, and then he gets captured again.
Yeah,
and now I want to know, like, okay, how's he going to get away?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen next? And it hooks you right then and there. Like, you know, this is the hero of the film. You know that he's going to overcome, but the stakes in this are just so high for him. Mm. You want to know how he does it.
Anybody else?
For me, it was, to be completely honest, it was the prologue. I mean, just the introduction was like, okay, this is, the setup was cool, you know, him talking, and then he gets in his car and just, like, drives off, and then he's getting chased immediately. Like, that set the stage for the rest of the film. Hmm. And it never veered off of that road. It really stayed on that thread, and I just, that, and for me, I just never felt that I really could breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I never felt that I could really sit down and be like, I can take a break, because, you know, everything is happening. Then we take this side story, and, you know, it's kind of slow. like a problem I had with Deadpool, but that's a different conversation.
Oh no, you're the first person to have anything bad to say about Deadpool that I've even talked to. So
that's a completely different conversation. But I felt that there was never a lull for me. It was just like it was a constant tug. And I just really loved it. And even finishing, like, it was so good I was watching the credits.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I was like, this is, like, I don't want to just turn it off. Like, I just want to keep watching.
I don't want it to end.
I'm not ready to let go. Why did Max walk away? No. But
I did read about, like, the Wasteland sequel. But I had also read that Charlize is not coming back. Well, at least her character is not coming back. And that George Miller isn't coming back either.
What? Oh, I don't want to see it now. Oh. Fuck this.
You guys can please double check me. But I remember hearing that it took him 30 years to, and he said that it took him 30 years to make this movie, and it was exhausting. The amount of time it took him, and that he just doesn't want to do it again. Now, if, you know, whoever has the rights to this film, if they want to do it, they have every, I guess, sadly, right to. but he doesn't want to direct another film again.
Well, I will say, I remember reading articles at the time, and I'm hitting up the Google machine now as I'm saying this. But
yeah.
This production was notorious for being a very difficult start and stop, and then even once it finally was really stopped, it was sort of not going well. That there were a lot of times that, like, the whole thing almost imploded on itself, a lot like The Revenant, now that you mention it. And I wonder if maybe this, I've not heard anything, I'm not trying to start any rumors, but Tom Hardy's in both, so who the fuck knows?
Right. I mean, you know, but it's like, you know, and he had mentioned, George Miller had mentioned that how difficult, you know, piggybacking off what you said, how difficult it was to film the movie, like the parts. They did film parts in Australia. The majority was filmed in Africa, but they did film parts in Australia, and if it rained, they could not film.
Yeah.
So, like, they had to, because there's no rain. So they in the film, so they have to wait, and that's a lot of money wasted, because you have to pay these people. You have to pay the production team. Like, if they can't work it, it's not their fault. They still have to get paid, and you're pushing back the timeline constantly. And weather was awful. He said that to fly back home was 27 hours. He's too old for that shit. It's just really exhausting, and he just doesn't want to direct another. He's writing the sequel. That's true. But he's not directing. He does not want to direct another one. He just doesn't want to deal with that stress of doing another film.
Oh, I'm like, my jaw is dropping. I'm on this site right now called factual.com. That's factual spelled with a PH. And I'm reading their article saying 9 facts about the troubled journey of Mad Max Fury Road. And just to kind of quickly cap off all the 9 that they say here. Originally slated for a 2003 shoot in Namibia, the film had to be delayed after the beginning of the Iraq War caused trouble with shipping and security, and production then began in 2009. It was being released 30 years after the last film, Thunderdome. Charlize Theron shaved her head for the role and had to wear a wig while they were making A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Mm-hmm.
Rumors flew that Charlize Theron and Tom Hardy, who plays Max, did not get along at all, and that Theron got to the point of not even speaking to Hardy on set. 5, constant weather delays and location issues caused the film to be delayed more than once, including cold when it was supposed to be hot, and vice versa. The Liam Fountain auditioned for Max, who lost the part to Tom Hardy. Played Max in a 2011 short film, Mad Max Renegade, which takes place between the first two films. What the fuck? Why is this part of this list? Fucking read shit ahead of time. I get it, but damn, guys, way to, like, really mislead with your headline. the film was shot in sequence, which is rare, and the storyboards were completed before the script. Over 80% of the effects seen in the film are practical effects, and originally Mel Gibson was going to have the role as a drifter in the film, but this never came to fruition. So that's 9 facts. It doesn't say anything, any, like, really hardcore, but good work, Factual. We'll plug you. Nice movie.
Yeah,
nice.
But I mean, definitely, like, the weather, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. I think a lot of those facts, like the bad ones, sans the rumor, or the conflicts of people, it came down to weather or things outside of the control, the Iraq War. Things like that, you know, you don't want to put your crew in danger just to film a movie. But, I mean, it sucks. And honestly, I'd have never directed a film in my life. But hearing from this, from Factual and his own words, from his own mouth, George Miller, I would not want to direct a movie like this. Like it just seems it seems too strict and too intensive. Like, yeah. What you have to put your actors through. I mean, Charlize Theron shaved her head, which I'm sure she chose to do it. But then if you have all these delays, but you also sign to do another movie or another movies,
yeah.
You have to wear a wig, you have to inconvenience yourself, and because it got delayed, and it's just troubling, right?
Yeah. You know? I mean, I can see that, but I also feel like. But then it got nominated for an Oscar, and you know that they're going to throw a ton of money at this and make life a lot easier on you on purpose. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if I spent 30 years and then finally got this thing made and it became this amazing thing through all these troubled moments, I feel like to then turn around and be like, I'm not doing this again, when they clearly have got to be throwing all kinds of fucking comfort deals at him, is sort of like, dude, then why did you do this? Why'd you do this one? You know what I mean? Like, why would you stop? It's all part of the journey forward. You know what I mean? Or
you could look at it. This is his swan song.
Well, all right.
This is the high note to go out on.
That's different too.
I don't think would be a bad idea.
And like, if he's retiring altogether, mm-hmm. or you're just saying from doing Mad Max films,
or if he's just retiring from directing. I mean, he can write from wherever.
I don't know. I just
you got to feel for them when they have to deal with all of that crap. I mean,
30 years. There are people who have multiple careers in that amount of time. This guy's 30 years. Well, making one movie.
I mean, it's not like that. He did other things, right?
He did Happy Feet, all that stuff. But, you know, also, George Miller is 70. He started this project when he was 40.
Yeah, like, holy
and,
shit.
And it, I don't think this is his swan song, and I highly doubt he's retiring. I think that he is just fucking tired, and he has every right to say, okay. I will write the rest of these films, because I think he has intellectual property to this, mm-hmm. to this franchise. I will write these films. But I don't have to direct them, and I won't direct them. If you want to telecom me from Australia, and I'm in my couch on my couch in L.A., that's fine. Right. But I'm not flying 27 hours at the age of 70 because the next film was probably not going to be made until I'm 96. So,
oh my God.
Like, you know, as I understand, and I also don't understand because I'm not a director. So,
well, we got time, obviously, Matt. So let's get on this.
I mean, we've got 30 years to make a, you know, our own Mad Max or whatever. But but I do sympathize with him, meaning like it took 30 years. He was 40. He's 70 years old today. Like it took him 30 years of his life to make a sequel.
I don't mean to sound so judgmental and harsh, but it just to me, it's like that's like saying, hey, you know, the person who just made that most amazing fucking thing you love. Yeah, they're fucking done. They said no, and they're gonna just hand it off to someone else. And you're like, well, fuck, man, that was
unfortunately that's
so
happening
good.
All the time, though.
Well,
and we've seen that with so many movies.
Yep.
And also, some of these things are getting to be too big for their own good. I mean, you look at what's happening with the Marvel Cinematic Universe and how, like, basically, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, the name Joss Whedon could not be synonymous with anything else, and now he's not even part of it anymore. And these are movies that we all were like, oh, shit, we're waiting around, and now it's finally happening, but, yo, this is still taking forever to implement all this stuff, and it's how do you not get fatigued? And here you have this thing where it's like we didn't even really know that behind the scenes for 30 years this thing was fighting to come to life, and then it comes to life, and you're like, whoa, and you're like, oh, but the guy who literally just got that done is like, yeah, I'm done. And you're like,
oh. but even look at Joss Whedon. I mean, I look at all the information that's coming out post his departure from Marvel. Not like he was a true employee there, but as a director of two films, like the reason he left, and he said he does not want to do any more Marvel movies. He said there's no bad blood between them, but it is exhausting. He said when he did Age of Ultron, he was a creative director on every other Phase 2 film. Like every other director and writer and producer talked to him about what he was doing with Age of Ultron, so it influenced those Phase 2 movies. He was always involved in those films, and he had no time to do his own projects. He just wants to do his own shit. And that's the problem with Marvel now is they're trying to court all these great directors for all these future films, but no one wants to work with them because when Marvel has you, it's like you can't do anything else for the next two or three years. Like you can't do your own projects, and also you can't you really don't have too much directional influence, even though you're the director. It's just your name. Like Marvel really holds all the cards, and then the puppet master, you're just a pretty face. And your name goes on the directing credits, but you don't have any rights to do anything else at the time because they just consume all your time. So I mean, I understand, you know, as a director being like, I'm exhausted, I'm going to continue to do my job, what I love to do, but I'm going to do it for another project.
Yeah.
So.
Just a palate cleanser, like something different for a while.
A pickle.
Yeah.
Pickle.
Wow.
Pickles are palate cleansers.
I would have said sorbet, but okay.
You could have said a slice of raw ginger. You could have said or pickled ginger.
See, I'm a pickle fanatic. Fried pickles.
There you go. I've got the bread and butter like little chips in my fridge, and they're stackers.
The B&Bs?
Well. Yeah, I love. Oh, dude, those are the best.
The
best.
The best.
Throw those
dude.
Things on a sandwich or a burger. Oh shit.
Or just in a cup.
Yeah, that too. That too. You know, just straight to your mouth, like no
straight
other,
to it.
No adulteration of the flavor. Just like a straight car chase with no other superfluous movie around it. Like, straight. Just
no backstory.
Cars go, people die. Rutgers, oh! And that giant storm. I mean, there were some really iconic. Like just images from this movie, like that storm when they just show what it looks like, and you're like, God's doing that. You're just like, whether you believe in God or not, that's meant for giants. Look at that thing, that's insane.
And we're gonna drive right into it.
God, she could lose us in there. We're free.
You're like, yep. Well, look at that thing, you dumbass. It's pretty fucking scary. You might not live through this shitbag, but let's see. Let's do it. Let's go. And Nux is like, let's go! It's fucking
what a lovely day!
Valhalla! So we would all recommend Mad Max Fury Road. Sean, are you have we convinced you that it's awesome, or are you just sort of like still placating us with this whole situation?
I said I had enjoyed it. I did not dislike this movie. So, I mean, yes, this is still something that I would recommend you seeing, because, again, there's so many different points of view and so many different things you're going to take away from it. You know, Clone has watched it like a billion times and still didn't catch a lot of things that Gomez found.
Yeah, and even like, you know, even if you don't, if you haven't seen it, like if you're a movie person, you're kind of obligated to, just because even if you've heard good or bad things, it's one of the most talked about films of 2015.
Yeah.
So it's definitely one of those films that, at least from that point of view, you know, you're more encouraged to see it just because of all the talking about it.
I'm all for movies that can really push practical effects too, because we've come to a point where there's so much CGI and okay, don't get me wrong, because you know I really like the whole MUVA thing that's happening, you know, like when I talked to Greg LaSalle, but I really liked the fact that this was actual hands-on. We didn't have to rely on everything else.
Yeah,
well, yeah, and there's a tipping point, right? I mean, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, well, practical effects, action scenes, blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm a big fan of the Marvel films, too, or DC or whatever. But these things are not, they're called impractical effects for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not physically possible to do. And sometimes, like, or you have the generation of episode 1, 2, and 3 of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And it's like, someone had diarrhea of CGI. Or if you want to have something a little bit more tangible to time or modern, look at The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies. I mean, that was literally,
although,
like, if there was a CGI easy button, Peter Jackson just kept pushing it.
Yeah. Now, have you guys seen the extended version too? Holy shit.
Oh, you couldn't pay me. You couldn't pay me. I sat there watching that film. I'm a huge Lord of the Rings fan and Hobbit fan. I sat there watching Battle of the Five Armies with my arms and legs crossed. I was livid.
Oh,
the movie was
no.
A piece of shit.
You got to see the extended one. Dude,
I'd rather die.
Action scenes that they put back into that, I was just like, whoa, really? It was pretty impressive. Like 20 minutes of just the fucking battle, and I'm like, whoa.
Because you know what kills it for me? You know, you asked the question about, you know, what is the standout scene for Mad Max?
Yeah.
For me, there was only an opposite of that in Battle of the Five Armies, and that was Legolas defying all physics. And playing Matrix and like jumping on those bricks.
Shit.
And I'm like, I had so much encouragement inside of me to just leave the movie theater.
And you're like, but there's only 10 minutes left. Let's see. I've already seen so much ridiculous
that, you know,
shit.
The book was all of like 200 pages and it was 3 movies. Yeah, that was my thing.
That too.
I also said, just from a creative standpoint, watch this film to see the world building at work.
Mm.
And just how much detail Miller's able to pack in with no voiceover, no narration, to get you the sense of, like, this is the world that these people are inhabiting.
Yeah. That is impressive.
Yeah.
Very, very.
Yeah, it's like the, you could tell that the challenge is like, all right, you've got this like 10 square miles of desert. Good luck. And they're like, we got to really build a lot of shit in here. But the way they did it, you're just like, I can just picture a whole world around it like this. And the thing is, I would like to see what things like Gastown look like, you know, or the bullet farm. What's a bullet farm? Are they growing bullets? What the fuck is this?
Those plants existed?
When you plant a 22.
Well, I'm saying, though, is it like, was it the site of a giant battle in like one of the final wars of the last world? And they're just like combing the dirt for any bullets that they can repurpose and rebuild? You know, like that would be an interesting extension of the world building. You know what I mean?
I mean, when you have this MMCU, because, you know, they're all short now, MMCU being for Mad Max Cinematic Universe, or extended universe, like everyone, it's like all these studios are now building this, right? I mean, this has limitless potential to, you know, you have the Wasteland is definitely coming out, that's for sure. Then they'll probably do some books and then a comic, and then they'll do four more. They'll do a movie every year that's a sequel, and then they'll do a movie every other year that's a prequel.
And somehow it'll eventually be part of the Star Wars shared universe. Disney will absorb it. It'll be like, oh yeah, that was one of that one planet that we just kept dropping people, like, you know, fucking delinquents on. It was like this, like, what Australia used to be as a colony. We
back
made
into
an
the
entire
yes,
planet,
yep.
you know?
Yeah.
First of all, I'd love to know what the hell were Russians doing in Australia?
Mm.
Oh, you mean for the actual war that went down?
Well, yeah, because that's what one of the earlier chase scenes with the guys in the spiked cars.
Yeah, was that what they were speaking? They were speaking Russian.
Speaking Russian.
That's awesome, because I was like, what the fuck? That's the kind of shit that they just do that without explaining, and they don't even nobody cares, dude. You didn't hear names. The chick's name is
like,
capable.
You know what? They're fine. Fuck it. They're Tusken Raiders.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what you're supposed to think. And then they call them buzzards later, and you're like, yeah, that works too. What the fuck ever, man? What the fuck ever? This chick's name is capable. How the fuck am I supposed to know this? Only by going to IMDb? Only by seeing a poster?
Or you know, the guy who's fighting Nux for the steering wheel at the beginning, his name's Slit. How are you supposed to know that?
He says Slit once. I heard that.
Because he's got the Glasgow grin up his, his face.
You Slit, what's going on? You're my Lancer. I just promoted myself. Yeah.
Yeah, no. And look, I might be anemic and dying, but...
Look at you! If you can't stand, you can't do war! And then the organic mechanic, if you caught his name...
Yes.
Look at you, son. You're a corpse. It's fucking crazy.
We never see again, by the way.
No, you see him later when he cuts the baby out of...
Your
girl's breathing a lust in here. That guy was so fucked up.
The scene was that he was taking his shit when they all drove off.
Oh, really? Is that true? Is this truth, or are we just making shit up right now?
No, that's true. That was the deleted scene. Like, he's off around the rocks, and he's like, wait, where are you going?
Oh, really? Damn. Well, then they had to cut that because he's with them later.
Okay.
All right, film school nerd talking about editing. Anyway, that would be me, not you, Gomez. Anyway, I think, is there anything left to talk about with this movie? The good guys kind of win, the bad guys kind of die. They fucking ripped Immotan Joe's face off at the end. It was a great victory moment, I thought.
I don't think so. Besides that, I mean,
yeah, I mean, everybody.
I would definitely recommend people if you have not seen it yet.
Yeah,
it's especially if you're a fan of like the Oscars or whatever. You know, you want to know why it's nominated. You should stop listening to this and actually watch the film.
Yeah, don't take our word for it. It is fucking amazing. Or you could take our word for it. It is fucking amazing.
It is amazing.
All right. Well, until next time on the What Am I Watching show, we are the Hollow 9 Network. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us at hollow9.podomatic.com. That's the word hollow, the number 9, followed by I-N-E. You can find us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast, and you can email us at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. It's a whole slew of ways you can get in touch with us and join in the conversation on awesome, fun shows like this. Go to iTunes, rate and review us there. That seems to be the popular place where all the cool kids hang out. And if you hit us up with some good reviews, like the 5-star variety, it helps us get a little bit of notoriety, helps us get a little bit bigger, and we can bring better programming your way. So be part of that. Be part of the movement, because guess what, man? Hollow 9 has launched. It is here. Enjoy. Thank you guys, panel, for joining us. Matt, what do you got to plug before you say goodbye?
Oh, yeah. One, thank you so much for having me on the podcast, of course. But I am a co-host and creator of Blurreds on Nerds podcast, and you can find us on Twitter at Blurred Nerd, and you can find us on Facebook at Blurreds on Nerds.
Awesome. Gomez, I know you're part of the network, but what else you got going on? Any publications we should be on the lookout for?
I am actually finishing up my post-apocalyptic mini novel, Burned Lands, which I'm hoping to have out this year.
Nice. Are there milking mothers in this? Or
there are no milking mothers. I'm sad to say.
Well, I just feel like that's a PSA. You know, you gotta be ready for this shit when you go to the cinema these days.
I do have one character who definitely suffers from mental illness, and that he's got a split personality. I actually have a biker gang and a bunch of other stuff that would be very familiar to anybody who enjoys Mad Max.
Nice, nice. All right, we'll be on the lookout for that. Sean, talk to us about the Fangirl Zone.
Well, you can head over to fangirlzone.com. You have all of our information there. We are always posting about all sorts of interesting things and a bunch of movies, and we have contests coming up if it haven't already started. Keep an eye out.
Yeah, by the time this comes out. If you haven't figured out by now, folks, I know we're only a couple episodes into the journey, but we record these things like way in advance. So it's all part of the master plan there. So, you know, some of the timing on things like contests might be a little off, but just it's our way of saying keep the fuck up with what's going on.
I think we all have about 7 different contests at some point because I have irons in the fire. So...
Yeah, Sean's a beast. Sean's a beast, guys.
We may have missed a few, or you may have missed a few at this point, but there's always more coming. And Facebook, Fangirl Zone, everything's on fangirlzone.com where you can hit us up and let us know. And I want to know if anybody knows what I'm talking about in regard to the Bechdel test and if you agree with me or disagree with me. So shoot a message over to Hollow Knight on this for us to talk about it at a later time.
All right, and with that, you know, we're making sense of the craziness between channels when you're flipping in the middle of the night. So when you find yourself on the cable or the Netflix, and then you sort of wake up and half an hour into something you forgot you started, and you ask, what am I watching? It's probably because you remember that's what we're here for, to watch that stuff and let you know exactly what you should be, shouldn't be, or maybe, fuck it, don't take our word for it, check it out yourself. But, until next time, I'm David Clone. Thanks for sticking with us, and remember, you'll find yourself on the Fury Road at some point. You've been listening to the Hollow Knight Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. Follow us on Twitter at Hollow9Cast. That's Hollow, the number 9, I-N-E, cast. Email us at Hollow9Podcast@gmail.com. Or find us at our home site, Hollow9.podomatic.com. Be sure to check out our affiliate, Fangirlzone.com. Find us on Facebook. Rate and review us on iTunes. Join in the fun. Hollow Knight.